Sierra Leone, like most countries in Africa, is rich in resources. Mining, particularly iron ore, diamonds and rutile, have led to economic growth in recent years. But despite its natural resources, 60% of Sierra Leone's population lives in poverty. And with a GDP per capita of around $500, it has relied for years on foreign aid. Sierra Leone is still recovering from a 10-year civil war that destroyed many of its institutions before ending in 2002. President Julius Maada Bio came to power in 2018. He promised to make his country financially independent by fighting against corruption. President Bio is a retired Brigadier General in the Sierra Leone Army and was proclaimed head of state from January to March 1996 after leading a military coup that removed Captain Valentine Strasser from power. Bio moved to the United States shortly after that to study international affairs. Once he was back at home, he sought the leadership of the Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP. Now in power, once again, the challenges are many. The Ebola outbreaks of 2014 and 2015, before Bio came to power, had significantly damaged the economy. Now, like many leaders around the world, Bio's tackling the COVID-19 pandemic. In addition to fighting corruption, improving literacy rates and life expectancy are also crucial. So after 2 years in office, is he succeeding? The president of Sierra Leone, Julius Maada Bio, talks to Al Jazeera. Julius Maada Bio, president of Sierra Leone, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera. Mr. President, let's start with COVID-19, the pandemic that has shattered lives, rattled economies and put strains on the health services. We've seen a new pattern, which is basically infections increasing worldwide. Where does your country stand? Are you thinking about putting in place new restrictions?
At the moment, no, because data and science tells us we are getting very little cases at the moment. So we are very much on the watch. We have all the pillars supporting the response system in place, and we are alert. But at the moment, we are not thinking about locking down at all. In fact, as a matter of fact, we have never really locked down as others have done. On two occasions, we had to do a three-day area-specific lockdowns so that we can pursue certain issues that we really wanted to achieve at the time. Of course, as you know, what is happening around the world, there's an increase. And since we are not experiencing that, we are very much trying to go back to normalcy as much as we can. But we are very much on the watch because COVID is around. Mm-hmm. So the quick economic recovery plan is meant to see how we can transition from the state of COVID or post-COVID and carry on with creating a scenario for livelihood in this country. At the moment, we are really not experiencing many cases as it is the case around the world.
The battle against COVID-19 brings back memories from your country's fight against Ebola in 2014 and 2015. What were the lessons you learned from that particular experience that was helpful to your country now as it tackles this pandemic?
Well, that is a quick reaction. We heard about the pandemic and we went into action immediately. And using our experience with Ebola, we are able to mount a preventive structure to make sure that we could prevent the advent of COVID in Sierra Leone. But of course, we knew we were fighting a losing battle because it was all over the world. And part of being part of the international community, we knew it was going to come here. But as we mounted the preventive measures, we were able to ward off COVID for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And during that time, we were able to stand up the various structures. Luckily, we've had a very bitter experience from Ebola, and we had still people in the system who had the expertise, who had the knowledge, and we were able to put our national COVID response team together. Mm-hmm. And so by the time we, on the 31st of March, when we had our very first case, we had a strong structure that was ready to fight off COVID. So this is how we've been able to keep it under control for a very large extent.
Let's talk a little bit here about politics in your country, if you don't mind, Mr. President. When you came to power, there's been some sense of anxiety and instability, particularly when you set up the Commission of Inquiry into cases of corruption that took place from 2007 to 2018. That's when the All People's Congress, the APC, was in power. Many said that this was a pure act of political revenge against your opponents.
Yes, but I think we have proven them wrong, because what we did was to get people out of this country, judges who presided over the commission, and they have, of course, shown that we did not interfere as a government. I did not interfere as head of state. We gave them the free hand to investigate, and they produced a report. From that report, we have produced a white paper. Mm-hmm. Definitely, the political instability, I will not say there has been political instability. We've had corruption fighting back, because once we took on the fight against corruption, we knew it was going to fight back. Mm-hmm. And we were mentally prepared. I, in particular, was mentally prepared for that fight. But it is a fight that we must fight, because it's about the very soul of our country. Many say we are poor. I would disagree with that. I think corruption has been the enemy, and we had decided as an administration to attack corruption head on. So we are ready for the ramifications of our fight against corruption.
This is the argument advanced by your opponents. They say that corruption is pervasive. It's not isolated. It's not about individuals. It's about the system that has been prevailing for many decades in your country. And you have been personally part of that political legacy of your country.
Yes, there has to be a starting point, definitely. Normally, I say the same thing to people. I say we have all been corrupt, but we have to draw the line. If we continue to be corrupt, we are not going to be able to have a better future for our children. We must accept that corruption is pervasive in this country, and we have to. But we know how it has negatively impacted our lives, our future, the future of this country. And as an administration, I did say before, even I won, that I was going to attack corruption. So we are very much aware that it's everywhere in the country, but we are also aware that the rate at which it has been going, the impunity with which corruption was rampant in this country, and it became fashionable, I would normally say. I wanted to make sure that we can we should check corruption.
I've been listening to you in the past saying basically that it's about time for accountability and transparency. And I'm expecting to hear some transparency from you, Mr. President, as I'm going to ask you some few questions here. One of those questions are about when you were campaigning and saying that you had issues with your predecessor, Ernest Bai Koroma's ties with China, particularly the deals signed with China. What was your biggest concern about those deals? Is it there was no sense of transparency, or because you thought the deals were with China were counterproductive to your country?
Well, I want to start by saying that China is a great friend of Sierra Leone. And we had issues with transparency and the way the deals were structured. They were not in the best interest of the country. And I did not attack the president. I attacked the particular deal, which was about Mamama, an airport that was going to be built, which is not going to be anything different from what we have now. If anything, it was going to be a smaller airport with less facilities. So I stood against that because we're talking about nearly $400 million United States dollars. So we still continue our friendship and the bond of friendship with China. But that deal and few others, we are totally against. They are not in the best interest of the people of this country.
And this explains why you decided there's absolutely no way you're going to go ahead with completing the project, which was basically the new airport outside of the capital. Is it because you were concerned that more loans could just end up being a debt trap for your country?
Of course, that is one. And the way it was structured, there was no need for us to leave that airport where it is and build another one. We can refurbish what we have and use it until, you know, when we have a windfall and we can afford it, then do it and do it in a rather transparent way where everybody will get to know what is happening or how the loan itself is structured.
But here's the thing here, Mr. President. Decades of instability and civil war have taken a heavy toll on the infrastructure of the country. We're talking about dams, roads, schools, grid systems. To rebuild, you need cash. Investors don't seem to be willing to step in. The Russians said that they were willing to step in and finance some of those projects. But you didn't seem to be really impressed, saying that we need to look into everything into more details before we move forward.
Well, I sit here with a national mandate and for the best interest of my nation. So when I look at any deal and I think it is not in the best interest of the people, I will reject that. We are open as a nation to investment, especially for infrastructure, because we know it's an enabler for development. But we are also conscious that we should not take on loans that are not productive. Mm-hmm. And yes, we make sure that the process of getting those loans are also transparent and in the best interest of our country. So we are not cherry picking. We just want to make sure that it is in the best interest of Sweden.
Mr. President, you know that your people will judge you in the future on the basis of what will you accomplish for them. And what baffles me and many people all over the world is how come Sierra Leone, a nation rich in diamonds and other natural resources, is at the same time one of the poorest nations on earth?
That is the exact reason why we are here, to change that narrative. And we are very active in the extractive sector, which you've just identified. I did say to you that we are not a poor nation. We have been caught up in bad governance for a very long time. And that is why I think you can feel the passion in me for fighting corruption. These are the things that have hindered our development. And with all the resources, if we do not bring about reforms in the governance of our resources, mm-hmm. we are not going to be able to cater for the needs of our people. So as you can see, one thing we have identified, resources, mineral resources or natural resources, people say are very important. But to be able to effectively manage that, I think for me, I have identified the human being, the human capital resource of our country as mm-hmm. the most important. And we have to develop that. And that is my priority project as a government. Human capital development.
When you talk about the extraction processes that have to be implemented, are you thinking about restructuring the whole sector? Because I'll give you an idea about what's happening in your country, Mr. President, if you don't mind. It's so poorly organized, the diamond mining sector, to the point where you are famous for being in the country where all it needs is just a shovel and a sieve, and there you go, and try your luck. This does not work. You cannot move forward as a nation if you continue operating under this particular scheme.
Well, that's why I told you that we are trying to sanitize the extractive sector. We are rich. We have resources. Beneath the earth, that the piece of land that we sit on as a nation, there are a lot of resources. But we have to provide some guidance. We have to have sound policies on how we extract these and use them for the purpose of developing our nation, taking care of the social programs. So when I mentioned earlier human capital development, already we have free quality education. We are paying for over 2.5 million kids in this country because as much as the resources are there, we can talk about diamonds and everything on earth, the human resource capacity of this country has to be developed. So we are very much engaged. It is a total a revamp of that extractive sector in mm-hmm. order to be able to get the benefits. This we have not done in the past, and that is why it is taking. And there are so many interests in and out of the country. So it is always difficult to restructure that sector.
Speaking of those interests, are we likely to see a zero tolerance when it comes to the international trading companies, which are more interested in their own interests, while at the same time they might be willing to manipulate the system for more revenues at the expense of the Sierra Leoneans?
Of course, there are companies, international corporate organizations that come in with and invest. We expect that they should have returns on their investment. But we also know that in the process of exploiting those resources, there is damage to the ecology and the environment, and that we should have enough to cater for the communities where these activities are taking place. And also for the nation, we need resources to be able to revenue to be mm-hmm. able to take care of the many things that we want to do to improve on the lot of our people.
But again, the potential is there. And again, with other sectors like agriculture, which was supposed to be a key economic sector, why is it lagging far behind?
For the very reason that we have spoken about, bad governance. And as I speak to you, it's one of those sectors. When I spoke about human capital development, in Sierra Leone, when we talk about human capital development, we are talking about the agriculture sector, food security, and education and health. Mm-hmm. So these are exactly the three areas. We are, of course, attending to other issues of government, but in the areas of agriculture, education, and health, we are placing a lot of premium on that. And we know that I have said to the mm-hmm. people of this country, that we should be exporters very soon, and we are working on a policy shift to make sure that we can produce enough for Sierra Leone and even export. Food security is really on our mind.
When you read reports of international organizations like the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund, which basically predict that your economic growth of your country will contract by something like 4% and that inflation will continue to hover around 16%, plus more than 50% of the population which lives below the poverty line, doesn't this look a grim reminder of what might happen in the near future? You seem to be facing an unprecedented, massive challenge ahead.
These are definitely very difficult scenarios you've just spoken about. But we are also determined to make sure that we are putting in place sound policies, shifting away from policies that have not paid off from the past, and making sure that we can. The inflation, we have been reducing consistently, as a matter of fact. Corruption, you might have had, when I took over, it was in the region of 49%, according to the rating by the MCC. Mm-hmm. Now we can talk about 81%. So it is not going to be an easy job. I don't expect that. But I'm very optimistic, and we are determined, and I'm sharing that optimism and with the people of this country, that only we Sierra Leoneans can change the fate of this country. And that is why I remain optimistic, because our people are beginning to buy into that, and we are going to fight the odds, as we have always done in the many instances where the nation has been faced with very serious challenges.
And you seem also to be willing to somehow change the stereotypes that have been going on for quite some time about your country. Those images of young fighters roaming the streets of the capital and elsewhere, pillaging villages. And to do that, you said that two things need to happen. First of all, education, and number two, the gender gap in your country. Can you give us an idea about how do you think you can move forward when it comes to those two important issues?
Education and gender.
Yeah.
We have taken the education, as I've said many times in this interview, as the main thrust of our government. We have declared three quality education, wherein all kids from pre-primary to end of secondary school, we go to school at the cost of government. It is not free. We pay for everything from learning materials to tuition to teaching materials, and we are even providing food in some instances. That is to make sure that everybody goes to school. We know the benefit of education. For the girls who have been disadvantaged for a very long time because of culture and neglect, we have also been doing quite a lot in that area. Sexual and gender-based violence we have taken on. We have very strict laws now and punishment for those who engage in rape. I even had to declare a state of emergency for rape last year, and we have put in place model courts to just handle that. Girls now have safe places in school to be able to take part in education and not to fear. My wife has been involved in a campaign to make sure that the girl child is free, you know, from early marriage, from rape. She is even providing sanitary pads, because we realize that the girls can lose up to 70 to 80 days days from going to school because they lack sanitary pads. And a lot of we have taken up the issue of the girl child very seriously, and the nation is catching up on that. So these are things we take very seriously. The issue about marauding gangs, you know, young men, that is history. We have settled, we have had a peaceful settlement of the conflicts we have. And interestingly, we are just about setting up a commission, peace and national cohesion commission, to keep a keen eye on just making sure that all issues that can instigate conflict of whatever nature are kept under control.
When you look at neighbouring countries where there's been more instability, particularly in Mali, Burkina Faso and Ivory Coast, and where people have become pretty much worried about the potential for military juntas to take over once again, what kind of message would you like to send to those people?
The situation of different countries vary. And what leads to military coup in one country may be different or similar. Those specific situations leading to coups again in Africa are things that we need to look at very properly. You know, I'm a civilian now, and I speak as a civilian. We should not get the military involved in what should be civilian affairs. But the military is also part of the country. The military will also suffer when there is bad governance, will also suffer when the civilian leadership is not doing what it's supposed to do.
Are you confident at this particular stage that Sierra Leone has turned the chapter of military coups?
Yes. We have decided as a nation that we are going to pursue the democratic path, irrespective of what is happening around the world. We know that the space for politics, when it is restricted, creates the possibility for military coups and other social upheavals. So what we have done is a collective determination as a nation that we will pursue the democratic path. And we've had four peaceful transitions. I have always been seeking the interest of the people of the country. I joined the military to fight for my nation. But even when I was involved in the military coup, it was for the best interest of this nation.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Julius Maada Bio, President of Sierra Leone. Thank you for talking to Al Jazeera. Thank you.
Thank you very much.